Welcome back, everybody, to the Division 2, Division 3 Inside Lacrosse podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, and with me, as always, Mr. Dan Kaplan. Dan, how you doing?
Doing well. Ready to get this thing rolling. I feel I need to figure out like a cliche line for right now when you introduce me so I can come in and have like a slogan or something.
You really do, because I literally do the same intro for every podcast that I do.
Yeah, so, and I come in with some stupid, like, yeah, I feel good, man. Let's do some talking.
I think you should just go, yay!
That's not a bad idea, actually.
I'm into that. One of my favorite podcasts does that. All right, let's get started here. We're going to recap last week to start this off. And where else could we start other than one of the most exciting endings to a game that I can recall all season so far? RIT 16, St. John Fisher 15. I don't think it was the game of the year. I do think it was the ending of the year, a back and forth contest, both teams with chances to ice it in the final moments, then to win it. But ultimately, RIT gets a look, 6 seconds left. I don't even know how to describe how open Spencer Bell was for the game winner. It looked like five guys were rushing Rosenblum coming down the side, and Spencer Bell just naked, nude, like a newborn baby on the weak side, catching and sticking the goal with .5 seconds left in the game. We were going back and forth the whole time watching this one. What'd you make of this?
I was distraught at the end of this game. I invested so much time and energy into that game that I just could not believe it ended that way. I wanted so badly for St. John Fisher to pull it out, and then you had to know that something was coming when they called timeout there. And as a fan, I was sitting there like, oh God, are they going to live through this timeout? And then when Spencer Bell was just that naked on the backside, and it really wasn't, like you said, it wasn't like anything crazy. I had a couple immediately afterwards, people were like, what happened? So Terry asked me, he immediately messaged me and goes, did they do a hidden ball trick for him to get so open? I was like, I don't think so. I think they were just really worried about Rosenblum sweeping to the middle because he had scored on it, maybe for the goal that tied it. Right before that, he had swept to the middle of the field, got downhill and scored. So they were just freaking out about that. And then they cut someone on the backside, and then they seal for Bell, and they couldn't have drawn it up any better. Credit to him for it. But
yeah, I mean, it really looked like five guys slide. It's a five guys slide at the same time. Yeah. It's every coach's nightmare. I'm sorry. Like, I don't want to harp on it, but watching it and losing a game like that, you're just like, ugh. Ugh. But yeah. I think Fisher had RIT on the ropes. Let's not sugarcoat this.
Like, they really did.
This was not, you know, the first time these two teams met. You know, RIT eventually just outpowered them in the fourth quarter. That's not what happened here. You know, RIT got three quick goals. Like, the last 2 minutes, they had three goals.
Yeah, they were ahead. This game was, I mean, it's hard to say that they, you know, vomited up the win, but they kind of did. They had this thing almost won. They were right there.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about doing our rankings earlier today with Kinnear, and one of the points I made is we have to put this team below St. John Fisher because we know that St. John Fisher annihilates this team, right? And I was waiting for a response from you, and it's just like, check mark. Like, yes, I agree. Yes. You know, RIT doesn't have a lot coming up because we've seen some postponements. I think we calculated they're about a little more than 2 weeks off coming up. How do you think that kind of impacts their team and the entire outlook for their season going forward?
Well, I think it's going to be hard, and it's something that obviously every team in the country is dealing with. A lot of them, you know, are doing their due diligence to stay healthy and stay, you know, eligible to play their games, and then they end up, I'll say, screwed because the other team doesn't, and then they're not able to get a rescheduled game or anything like that. And so it's something that every coach is going to have to deal with, keeping everybody engaged, keeping everybody healthy, keeping everybody, you know, focused. I just hope that they're able to do that and use this time, this 2 weeks, and get better, right? And hope that they aren't
regressing.
I hope they aren't getting worse during this time. Yes. You know, I hope they can get on the field and get some practice in, whether it's, you know, just in groups of, you know, smaller groups while they have to figure it out, whatever it is. Hopefully they're doing whatever they can to make sure that they're not getting worse during this time. And the biggest thing is, you know, addressing the defense that to me is way too stringent on putting the ball on the ground. Like, yeah, they want to put the ball on the ground so they can spark transition, but yeah, they're doing it too much. They're overboard with it. Yeah. And they're giving teams offense, and they could do a little bit better. And then in years past, maybe they were able to get away with it because Walker Harrell was bailing him out. But yeah, so far this year, he hasn't been, you know, Yes, that's correct. Yeah, he got pulled in this game. But I don't know if it's really his fault or if that they're just giving up higher quality looks because they're trying to put the ball on the ground too much. You know, it's something they're going to have to figure out. And hopefully they can use this time to do it.
I think because they're sliding quickly and like covering for the press out, the backside is open a lot more. So they're not just getting beat by like two pass goals. They're getting beat by skips.
Right.
And they're also trying to beat teams with skips. And I think in this game, this is one of the first games where I've seen RIT's skip get picked off a lot. Like, Fisher was ready for it. They scouted it. They played them already. They packed the middle, and they couldn't get balls over the top. So, I don't know. I do think that RIT is still, like, the best team in the nation until Tuff starts playing. And Salisbury, you know, I guess I would say, like, if you're just looking at resume, Salisbury steamrolling people is not something we can ignore. And we won't. But RIT is still undefeated and Salisbury has a loss. So I think that's why RIT is continually above them in the polls. And during this 2 week stretch, I think that might continue, even if Salisbury keeps crushing people. Speaking of which, Salisbury plays the loser of the next game we're going to talk about this weekend. But let's go back. Lynchburg 12, CNU 5, the rematch. Not much of a rematch. 8-goal run from the Hornets right in the heart of this game. Pretty much ended it before it even got started. It was tied 2-2. Brady Altabella scored early on or midway through the second quarter. And then CNU just couldn't score. Didn't score until halfway through the fourth quarter. It was a completely dominant performance from Lynchburg in my eyes. The captains, CNU, scored 3 of their 5 total goals in the waning moments of the game when everything was already decided. This could have easily been a 15-2 game. What stuck out for you when you watched it?
Biggest thing in this one, Lynchburg won 17 or 20 faceoffs in this game, where in the first game, the CNU was able to kind of mitigate Quentin Ritchie at the X and gain possession a lot. And those possessions early and those possessions, you know, where you can score on some early transition and then hit them again, win a face-off and score on 6-on-6. Like, that just does wonders for your confidence. And those are difference makers. Whereas every time you score, if the other team gets the ball and then scores, or if they're playing make it take it, it just makes it impossible for you to get into a rhythm on offense. So, I mean, power to them. We knew Lynchburg was going to adjust. One big thing that they did was they played Nate Schaefer, the left-handed attackman from St. Peter's and Paul's. He had 5 points, so that was his first start of the year. So that was a good adjustment that they knew that they could make if they're going to see that CNU zone, and he was able to, you know, make them pay.
They didn't, you know, thinking about it again, they didn't get a lot of goals from that right side with lefty shots in that first game.
Yeah,
like most of their goals came on crease and left wing righties stepping in shots.
You mean for Lynchburg?
Yes.
Yeah. Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a, I mean, that's a great adjustment because now you're spreading the zone.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Schaefer gives him a natural lefty out there. So it was a combination of him and Dylan Wolf, who was also a natural lefty. But those two playing in that spot towards the end of the CNU game and then the first game and then in the second game gives him a natural lefty out there. And I think that really helps.
Yeah. the couple ways you can beat the zone, a lot of people do the overload, which is smart. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, especially if you're getting good wing looks and the zone isn't pinching enough or the goalie's not making the far pipe saves. But the other way to beat it is just with good ball movement and quick sticks, and nowhere is your stick quicker than when it's in your dominant hand. So I think, you know, that's what we saw here. And, you know, great, great win for Lynchburg, you know, good revenge game for them. Where does this put CNU for you as they head into another huge matchup this weekend?
Well, I think I give them the benefit of the doubt going into the game. So I think as seeds go in the South, it's Lynchburg 1, CNU 2, Salisbury 3. But they have a big test ahead of them, right? Salisbury's been playing well, like you said. They're hungry. They want that first seed in the South again. They, you know, feel like that that is inherently theirs. So yes, they're going to go out and try and take it now. And it'll be interesting to see what CNU does to adjust and see how they can learn from this game and come back and beat Salisbury this weekend.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next game. St. John Fisher, a team we already talked about, 17, Ithaca 9. Every time, and we were talking about this again when we were talking about the top 20 this week, every time I get ready to write them off, right? Fisher, I mean. They have two losses to RIT and one loss to St. Lawrence. Then they come back and they just layeth the smacketh down on a top 20-ish opponent. And we're here and we kind of go, all right, well, they're really good. You can't just look at the record with them, right? They're one of those teams that, because they play RIT twice, they're inherently kind of behind the eight ball unless they get a win there. But Ithaca is a team we were wondering about and kind of seeing what they could do. And, you know, Fisher kind of asserted their dominance here. I mean, an eight-goal win is no joke. What did you see in this one?
So we've talked about St. John Fisher a ton, but we have not talked about their attackman Ian Evans a whole ton. And he is awesome. He is as legit as it gets. I don't want to keep bogging everyone down with St. John Fisher just because we've hit him a bunch, but that is one more person that in the repertoire when we talk about awesome attackmen in the Division III landscape, we have to bring him up as well. And then obviously your guy, Nicholas Miller, but we've talked about him plenty. Yes. And Ithaca is really interesting. I think that they're one of those teams where it's like they're probably going to beat all of the teams on their schedule that they should beat. And then if they can steal a win or two, like a St. John Fisher or a Union or a St. Lawrence or something, then that would be really interesting. But I just don't know if it's in the cards after watching that game. You know, it'll just be interesting. One thing to watch.
We've got a couple more games to roll through here just to get you guys updated. Oh, it's a new Mac game. It's probably the only new Mac game we're ever going to talk about, but I'm okay with it. Coast Guard, 14. Springfield, 13. This is an upset, not in the sense that Springfield is always better than Coast Guard. It's that Springfield has been uniquely set up to do great during this kind of like time where graduate years and transfers with COVID are easier to set up. Coast Guard is a service academy, and I wrote punished because, but that's not the right term. But in terms of bringing in players and retaining them in the current circumstances of the world, they can't do that. They are legitimately hamstrung by the cadet's duty. Right? To like, you're not getting an extra year to play at Coast Guard. And because of that, I can't believe that Coast Guard won on that principle alone. But I think we know that Coast Guard has some ballers. This is not a team that's as good as the one that beat Wesleyan. Everyone knows that. But beating Springfield is a statement win. And I know you like one of those players in particular.
Yes, yeah, that's Caleb Holdridge, their left-handed attackman. He's really, really fun to watch, dynamic. And he's not just somebody that I like. He's somebody that, like, when we do our national polls and things like that and we bring in all of the, you know, opinions of college coaches, he gets a lot of love, too. And yep. So he's somebody that is really, really, really fun to watch. And if you're not watching Coast Guard, give him a watch and give Caleb Holdridge a peep and let me know what you think of him.
Yeah, Holdridge got nominated by Berkman for an honorable mention All-American. And I only know that because I talked to the Coast Guard coach a couple weeks ago. And he was like, wow, thank you. And they played Springfield a couple years ago. So he remembers. Berkman remembers. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the next game. Hampton, Sydney, 14, Washington Elite, 12. Got some fun DMs about this one, but didn't have a chance to catch any of it live. What'd you make of this?
I mean, if you're going to beat Hampton and Sydney, you have to keep Hayden and Medwar off the board, and they combine for 10 points. So that's trouble number one right there for W now. Right. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that this makes sense. We had both of them kind of towards that top, like, between 18 and 25 with Hampton Sydney right. ahead of WNL. So I think this kind of checks out 14 to 12 game. And those two North Carolina attackmen, man, they're awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, worth noting, like, Kinnear's a Hampton Sydney like fan. Like, he watched them play and did a story on them, and he likes them, which everyone is entitled to their opinion about their teams. I think they're good, but I think they're perpetually in that 15 to 20 range, 15 to 25 range, like every year. Same thing with WNL, except I think with WNL, like, obviously, if you're going to accuse me of a bias, it's that I think WNL always has too many turnovers to win games. So I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to go on that hill. I'm going to climb that hill. I'm going to get my hands all crusted up. I'm going to get mud on my boots, and then I'm going to die on it. So that's fine. I'm fine. All right, a D2 update. What? Yes, D2. Newberry, 13. Limestone, 7. This game is famous for the IL audience 100% picking Limestone to win. And as we saw with some memeage of this result, Newberry took that personally.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Newberry. They lost against three top 20-ish D2 teams, including Mount Olive and Queens, by a grand total of 4 goals. To be fair, Lemoir Rhine tuned them up by 10. But they have now beaten Coker, who is actually decent. Like, they play a decent game, and Limestone. Their leading scorers are a Texan and a Canadian. And next week they play Wingate, who, as listeners know, we have anointed as one of the gatekeepers of sorts for Division II. I know you're mostly a D3 guy, but I know that you also saw that result of everyone picking Limestone and then kind of getting the blowback from that on social media. What did you think about this?
I was surprised that there was 100% on Limestone.
Yeah.
They've just been so reeling all year, and Newbury's one of those teams that it's kind of been, I'll say, on the come up and has been kind of lurking, just getting better and better. And then the fact that they were able to pull it off, I don't feel like was that crazy in this year. And I don't want to belittle it or anything like that, but
yeah,
but I don't know that it was as giant of an upset as the fan picks would have indicated.
It's not. I think it's more of an upset of the people that are picking, and like, people are going like, oh, well, I'll get the Limestone game, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're picking on history. This is not the year to pick on history, my bud. It's not going to happen. It's not going to work for you. We're breaking history this year. We're in a weird time. It's the Wild West. Anything can happen. Speaking of which, the NESCAC starts next weekend. Here's how it's going to break down. They're going to have two mini conferences, and they're all going to play each other once. Right. So the first conference kind of capsule is Tufts, Colby, Conn College, and Bates, and they will all play each other. And the winner of that will go to the championship game for the NESCAC. The next pod is Wesleyan, Williams, Trinity, and Hamilton. And the winner of that will play the winner of the previous one. They will get the NESCAC championship in the AQ out of that. That's like the arrangement that they have made. It's huge. Obviously, we think, Dan and I both think, sorry to speak for you, Tufts is the favorite here to go forward. But given those four, right? Given those four and the other kind of capsule there, I think we're in agreement that we like Trinity.
I do.
Is that true?
I do.
Yeah. I do too, because Williams and Wesleyan are missing a lot of dudes.
I mean, from what I've heard, if Wesleyan wins the NESCAC, goes to the NCAA conference, or it goes to the NCAA tournament, like, just making it alone, Coach Rapp is the coach of the year. No doubt. Hands down.
Oh, he's the coach of the decade. I will get a Coach Rabo tattoo if they do that. I'm not saying that to be like contrarian. Like it literally will be the best job by that coaching staff ever, including their 2018 championship.
Yeah, and Will Pilott's getting head coach job following year.
Yeah. Oh no, not oh my god, what if that happens? I have to get a Rabo tattoo. That's fine. All right. It's not that I'm like saying you can't do it. I'm saying if you do it, I'll be wildly impressed. Williams losing a ton of their guys.
Trinity has a bunch of young talent.
Trinity's got like 63 guys on their roster. Trinity is an army.
And a very good goalie.
Yes.
It's going to be huge up there. You're going to see a bunch of shots. You need good goalie play.
I don't think going into all this stuff happening, the NESCAC is the perfect example of just like chaos reigns. Right? Like even the, yes, Tufts is a constant and Tufts was able to keep their guys, but Tufts Trinity would not be a matchup that anyone would have picked 2 years ago, 3 years ago, ever. Even a year ago, I think people would be surprised by that. I'm not saying like it's not possible for Williams to kind of put something together or for Hamilton to get some victories too. But I don't know. I think it'll be crazy. And also Tufts is in the tougher conference, man. Like Colby has a lot of their guys back. Khan has a lot of their guys back. Bates kind of doesn't. But, you know, those other teams are very good. And not having Khan and Wesleyan in the same conference, I think, was kind of funny because they're literally like, what, 5 minutes from each other? Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Again, no Amherst, no Middlebury, no Bowdoin this year for the NESCAC. So that's why we're doing, you know, kind of two mini leagues for the championship. I also have something that I'm going to kind of break on this podcast. The NESCAC is going to play with masks and mouth guards in games, which I don't think we've seen yet, right? I think that's going to be, I mean, we're going to see, I'm coaching in high school in New Hampshire, and I'm that's what we're doing. So I think it's kind of like a geographical thing about if you've seen that yet or not. A lot of sports have done it, but I don't think men's lacrosse has done it at the collegiate level, and that's what we're going to see from the NESCAC. So how does that affect the play? How does that affect everything? Hopefully not a lot is my hope. Hopefully not a lot, but I think it's something to consider and something to look at going forward. Because I think if they make the tournament, they're going to do it too.
Yeah, it sounds gross.
It really does. Like I run with a mask sometimes, most times if it's like a populated area, and I just pull it up and I have a gator and it's still like, it's annoying. It's not like impossible. It's not the worst thing in the world. And like, they should do that if that's like what they deem necessary in their mandate. Like, I'm not making fun of it. I'm not anti-mask at all. Like, it's important to keep people safe. It's just like you said, the best description is, it's just gross. I hope they get new masks every game. This is just going to be like snot and saliva everywhere. Yeah. Not going to be great. Sorry for that image, guys. All right. Let's move on to D2 again. We previously mentioned this. Wingate versus Newberry is the best game of the weekend. Keep an eye on that. But we've seen some cancellations in the NE10. And if I see more, I'm going to get worried. Like, or I'll think about getting worried. I won't actually be worried, but I'll like consider being worried if I see some more NE10 games dropping, because that's a conference like it's not a conference that is, you know, lacking in opponents. It's literally called the NE10. There's 10 teams, like we get it. So they can afford to do that at this point, but I am, you know, kind of worried. You know, we're getting Lemoyne dropping games too, so, and they're perpetually number one. I personally don't think Lemoyne is the best team in D2. That's my personal opinion. I think it's Lemoyne Ryan or Tampa. And I would put Lemoyne third. But that's me. It's just my opinion. Any thoughts on that before we move on?
No, let's move on. I'm ready.
You're ready. Your body's ready for Salisbury. CNU. Can CNU bounce back to the loss to Lynchburg? Can anyone bounce anything around Salisbury, or will the Seagulls just pick it up like trash and eat it? Did the Lynchburg loss, this is the actual question, did the Lynchburg loss just activate this Salisbury team? Because they are just smoking goals past people with disturbing regularity in all of their other games.
I think it was the wake-up shot that they needed that was like, all right, we aren't just going to roll through teams because we have Salisbury on our chest and we're bigger and faster and stronger than everyone. We still have to do the due diligence that it takes to win games, the type of a thing. And not for their coaching staff or anything, but for their players to realize like, okay, we need to actually focus in and, you know, play hard and stick to the game plan and do all of the things that it takes to win games. And that's what they've been doing. They've been the more disciplined team. They've been the team that's, you know, owning possession time, that wins ground balls and all that type of stuff. And I don't see that changing on Saturday. I feel like if it does, it's going to be because CNU was able to ramp things up and actually make them play faster than they want to play. There's no way that CNU is going to be able to like zone them or like do things to try and slow them down to win the game. I think what they're going to have to try and do is speed them up. And so unless they can do that, I see Salisbury ramping this thing and winning pretty handily.
Yeah, I think CNU's only chance is for Salisbury's shooters to have like really bad days.
Yeah, Hanway has a good day.
Because they're going to get shots. Right. Yeah, they're going to get shots. Like the zone, you will always get more shots against the zone than man-to-man.
Yeah, right? And the stretch shooters that Salisbury has, they're going to be – they're just a hard team to zone because they can make you have to suck out. They make you have to suck in and play in tight because they do such a good job with cutters inside. Right. And if you do a good job of, you know, covering all that up, well, now you're giving up stretch shots and they have shooters that can bring it. You know, whether those shots that they can bring end up on cage is another story. But when they can get those things on cage and they're dialed in, that's a really hard thing to stop with the zone.
Yeah, and you look at the other areas where Salisbury is strong, you know, defensively, the ability to win face-offs, the transition play, which I think if I'm going to pick at Salisbury, which like I think it's like my duty to pick at them a little. Not great in transition in terms of some of their games. They've made mistakes, they've made turnovers, and they've cleaned that up a lot in the last couple games. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's easy to clean stuff up against teams that are not as talented as you. Like, it's easy to cast that mirage out. But I think if you're looking for a way for CNU to get their foot in the door for this game, I think it's beating them in the sub game. It's getting over the top balls. It's executing on every single fast break chance they get. That's how like the game stays winnable. If they can't do that, I just don't see them being able to beat them. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're going to have to speed them up. I think they're going to have a few of those things happen. They're going to have to find a way to create some sort of turnovers, be it in the clear or defensively, because I don't think that they're going to do super well at the X. You know, they're going to have to do some things to kind of mix it up and either speed them up or get them out of rhythm, something like that, that isn't the zone, because the zone isn't going to be aggressive enough to actually put the ball on the ground or create possessions that they're going to need to have come down the stretch.
I've always wondered why, like, if you're playing against a zone that overloads and you are getting shots from the overload side, why the defense doesn't sneak on the backside to try and get backups when they miss shots. Like, usually there's a guy behind, you can't do that.
Wesleyan does it.
Yeah, I know. You're not supposed to tell anyone that they do that.
Yeah, I told somebody that I've been on record saying that Wesleyan leads the country in missed shots ran out.
Yeah, it's definitely the secret to their zone for sure. It pulls the spoke out, but like if you pull the spoke out and you get a turnover, it's still a turnover for me.
Yeah,
I mean it's not counted as a turnover on this. I'm also like into counting that as a turnover.
I bet they do.
I mean, maybe their stat guys do, because everyone's stat guy is a little different. But yeah. I think universally in lacrosse, it should be counted as a turnover. That's just my opinion. All right, let's move on to a game that I know that you will be watching probably before any other game. And that is York versus Stevens. York had some postponements, Stevens as well. Can we call this the Matt Witcher special in honor of the legendary Spartan being picked up by the Water Dogs? Is that something we can do?
I think we probably should. I don't know why we wouldn't.
All right.
Well, I really wish it was against Stevenson, because that would be a real special way of going at it, inaugurating the Matt Witcher special, because he has a vendetta against those Mustangs.
Yes. How do you see it? How do you see it going up against the Ducks, though?
It's a really good question. I think it's just hard because it's York's first test. I don't think that we can really consider many of York's opponents so far, you know, top tier. So this is really their first game against a team that's been tested already, because Stevens has already seen Stevenson. And it's hard with the in-conference schedule, where you can't go and schedule an out-of-conference, even if their, you know, geography makes sense or anything. So this is their first test. But so far, I think that they've been playing really well. They're dialed in. And I'll let a little cat out of the bag here, but Gunnar Reynolds, who hasn't played so far this year, is expected back just about any day. I don't know. I mean, this is an awesome story. I don't know if anybody, if you saw this specifically, but so Gunnar, who I know you liked his game last year, yep. He tore his ACL in the summer, and then as a result of the surgery, actually had a stroke and was, you know, told to tell the people you love, you know, you love them, because you're going to have the surgery, and you know, you never know. And, you know, a few months later now, 8 months later now, he's looking at returning back to the field. So that's a really, really cool story. I'm not totally sure if he's back for this weekend. I don't know if he even knows if he's back for this weekend, but should be any day now. And that's going to be a really, really cool story when he gets back out there. And, you know, and not to mention the fact that he gives them an All-American midfielder that can go both hands and make you slide. If you're going to try and not slide to York, well, Gunner's going to make you have to slide, because he can beat you to either hand. He can hit you down the alley, and if you catch up, he's going to roll and smoke one by you either way. So on the field, he gives them a huge mark, a huge bump, but they're going to have to find somebody to run their box.
Oh, man. Dan Kaplan putting out, like, story pitches on the podcast.
Oh, that's, no. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, if you want to get your Gunner interview in, he's a very, very, very open individual.
All right, well, I'm going to call dibs on it, because I need to write more stories. Let's move on to Ithaca Union, which we're going to move on from this one quickly because it's already postponed.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have Dickinson G-Berg. It's Gettysburg's opener. And then Ursinus versus WEC is on but got moved to Wednesday. We're just seeing a lot of postponed games. And I kind of touched on it earlier, but Dan, you set up the stream links and double check schedules every day. I'm going to ask you, like, a really pointed question, and I want to get your honest answer. Is all of D3 in trouble?
Is all of D3 in trouble? I don't think so. What I do think would be really helpful, and I don't think that it's truly in the cards, but it just does not make any sense to me that we could have two teams test positive that are, you know, miles apart, but because conference rules say you're only playing teams in your conference, they just can't play. And so I don't know 100%. Obviously, this example hasn't happened yet, but let's say Gettysburg had a game that was postponed at the same time that York had a game that was postponed. Both teams are being tested. Both teams are doing the due diligence that it takes to be positive and be eligible to play. But because conferences have said, oh, you can only play either teams in your conference, because once you start competition, you can only play teams in your conference, or just with COVID rules, you're only playing teams that are in your conference. Like, the fact that those two teams can't get on the phone and say, hey, did you guys test positive on Tuesday? Yeah, we tested positive on Tuesday. Okay, cool. Let's play on Wednesday.
You mean negative?
Yeah, whatever. That. Can you guys play on Wednesday? Yeah, we can play. Can you guys play on Wednesday? Yeah, we can play. And that can't happen. It is so frustrating to me. you know, the teams that are doing their due diligence to stay positive, to stay negative, yes, and be eligible to play need to be able to get those games in.
Yeah, and the other part of this to point out to people is that Division III schools and athletic departments just don't have the flexibility of Division I teams. You know, like Virginia playing Army on short notice at the beginning of the season is not something that can happen here. Like, yeah, there's too many rules. There's too many like you were saying before we even started recording, there's conference rules that once you start conference play, regardless of all of this, you can't play outside of it. That's why teams don't play, you know, conference play is slated for a certain part of the season. It's usually the back half. And we're in the back half, man. There's no, like, takey-backsies, you know, especially in this climate. So, I don't know. I mean, we got NUMAC was supposed to open last weekend, canceled two of their three matchups that they had ready. NE10 just canceled Des Moines Adelphi, like, last night, right? I mean, yeah. Kinnear was literally getting ready. He had like a nice, you know, mug of tea. You know, he's got his kids in bed. He's ready to just fire it up. And in real time, Kaplan in the Slack was like, yeah, that got canceled. And you just like, you couldn't.
I didn't want to break it to him, but I figured it was better that I did before he tried to pull up the web stream and was like, what the heck?
Yeah, he was ready to do that. He was typing it in, and Kaplan just like, yeah, that's not happening. And his reaction was negative. all right. I'm worried. And again, I know I said I like would think about being worried, but I am kind of worried if this keeps happening. Like and there is kind of like new waves of COVID, like kind of hitting different parts of the country and other parts. And it's easy for me to be honest with you in New Hampshire, like we've been below 2% pretty much the whole time. So for all of it's almost like, I'm not saying it didn't happen up here. It definitely did. It just decimated like every single retirement home in the state is the majority of the cases. So for up here, it's difficult. And I know it's difficult for other people too. That's why I'm saying this, not just for me. It's difficult to relate to the impact of this if it's not directly hitting you. And I think looking at D3 and D2 going forward, it's starting to directly impact seasons. And that's, if it keeps happening, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And I hate to put that out there. I don't want that in the universe. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to say it and then have it happen and be like, oh, well, karmically, that's my fault, which is a weird way to put it. But I would feel like bad if that happened. I hope that, and I know that all these teams are doing their best to stay healthy, to get their tests, to keep their distance from other people and just play lacrosse, which is a gift. And I'm just like, I want to put it out there. It's a reminder that it's a gift that we get to play because we can lose it any day, just like that. It's gone. Like, we need to be prepared for that. And I think people are just kind of like sick of this pandemic and they want to move on and they don't care. And it's like, all these teams are sacrificing to give you seasons, to give themselves seasons, to fulfill like their dream of playing college lacrosse. So I really hope that it works out. Let's move on and end this with the D2, D3 play of the week.
Woo!
There we go. That's how you should start the podcast.
Woo!
For me, it has to be the long pole goal because I love long pole goals from Mercier's defenseman, Tommy Angelicola, who got a full field goal for Mercyhurst last week. We're going to post the Twitter link to the video of this in the post for the podcast. So definitely check that out. They also did it the previous week. And the lesson I believe is don't run a 10 man against Mercyhurst. Yeah. I know it's tempting because and I was talking to Kinnear about this earlier. The thing about Mercyhurst is they're so big and they're so fast that they can just out athlete you and win a game against you. And they also have a great attack unit with Devin Pfeiffer and Caleb Cooper. So like, it's a real deal team. And now the Poles can score. It's like, all right, well, how do we stop this team? And we'll see. I mean, they rocked Lake Erie last night. So I don't know. I think Mercyhurst is in that top four team discussion for sure in D2. And can't wait to see what comes out of them, even if they hate me because hypothetically I had them losing the championship game in a random article that we wrote, like predicting the end of last season. And they're still mad at me. So stop being mad at me. I'm giving you dap. And you got the play of the week. That's going to do it for us at the D2, D3, Inside the Cross podcast. Just a gentle reminder, stop DMing me. But you can also, follow me at the Kyle Devitt. Dan, where can people find you?
At DKaplan46. And Kyle doesn't mean that. He doesn't mean that. Do not listen to him.
No.
He loves you all.
No, seriously, stop. Just hit Cap. He needs it. He likes it. All right. Thanks for joining us.